SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
The Harrow break is finished. Here comes another. It's not the same cavalry charge it used to be, because now, after the Harrow break, the first 10, 15 minutes are just for workers, which is a new innovation and a good one, and certainly something that probably got its origins as part of the Derby training session, and kind of a nice. This is a good little wrinkle.
Yes, and Delmar started it. A year and a half ago, during the morning, it just down there, it seems like there's more traffic, and it just made sense. But I'm sure it originated from
the Derby/Breeders' Cup concept
as well. And so it just makes sense that these horses could go out, do their job,
get the
without
work.
Worrying about, yep. Another 10, 20, 30 horses, going all different directions around them. So what do we probably have? 20 horses went out.
Yeah, it looks like about 10 pairs, eight pairs of horses. Then for workmates, and then a couple of stragglers that'll go as single types. Steve Haskin is standing by, and there he is. Rick, say good morning to Steve Haskin.
Hello, Steve Haskin. How are you?
I'm actually sitting by, but hello, Rick. And I knew that it wouldn't take too long for you to get a new job. I think you're just a born co-host.
Yeah,
I want to see you every day. Instead of hammer and sickle, we'll have hammer and bickle.
But I'm Bob.
There we go.
Hey now.
Thank you. Yeah, this is when you come. Like I say, when Steve comes out here west, it's not that cushy 9 o'clock start. We start here before the sun comes up out here at 6 o'clock. It's pretty funny. Now, I want to ask you before we get too far. I had brought up the point on Friday about the situation in Nebraska, and I know you have family out there. How's things in Nebraska?
Well, it's drying out. I know they know a lot of people that that suffer a lot of damage, but it was more. It was probably like maybe 30 miles or so. Actually, maybe a little closer to Omaha, the bad hit areas. But, it's probably about maybe 20, 30 miles from Lincoln, where they suffered most of the flooding. But it was really, it was really bad. I mean, there were complete towns that are, like, washed away. I mean,
it's awful.
I mean, horrible stuff out there. But, they obviously got a lot of rain, but no flooding. It's different. They're in a big city, and Lincoln is not really a flood zone. But some of those small towns outside, and those farm fields around there, and it really got washed away. I mean,
devastating,
it's horrible. And the thing is, this was like a residue of a storm that actually brought blizzard conditions, north and west of them, like the northern part of Nebraska, northwestern part of Nebraska, Colorado. Around the Denver area. I mean,
Colorado Springs.
With a bad blizzard. So they got the rain part of it, but, I mean, it's just torrents of rain. It's just crazy. I mean, everything has gone crazy. I think, people have gone crazy. The weather has gone crazy. I mean, the whole world has gone crazy. We have more natural disasters now than probably in the last 30 years than we've had maybe in the history of the earth. I don't know. It's just terrible. I mean, these tsunamis and earthquakes that are claiming thousands and thousands of people and fires and I don't know what's going on, but it's just crazy. Don't know. You just don't know where or when or how you're going to be affected.
Well, we'll wait for the locusts and the frogs and
exactly. That's next.
Steve, I got to ask you before we talk results and look ahead to the three preps this weekend. Tell everybody about the Virginia trip. I saw some terrific pictures.
Yes, it was a great time. I mean, you know, it's become like one happy family. There's a new Facebook page and a club, and a lot of those members joined. It's like it's a secretariat page, you know, the horse that God built. But there's a lot of new members, and they sort of came over from another site. But it was wonderful. I mean, Kate Tweedy, as usual, was fantastic. Kate Chenery, I should say. But it was great. We had a lot of activities, and people had a great time. And this year was different because not only did we celebrate Secretariat birthday, but we celebrated Reaver Ridge's 50th birthday. So I got up and gave a big talk on the 1971 Garden State Stakes. The big people don't remember what a big race that was. I mean, it was at the time of Women's Lib, and it was Reaver Ridge against Number to Count. And the funny thing is that, you know, Roger Lauren had been offered the job for Meadow Stable, and he had accepted the job. He was taking over, you know, Meadow Stable, you know, which was doing okay, but it was on a little bit of a decline. They were looking for a new trainer to replace Casey Hayes, and they hired Roger Lauren, and then he got offered the job with the Fips horses. How are you going to turn that down? You know, they've had the champion two-year-old every year, and he wound up accepting that job and then recommended Lucian for the Meadows job. So I don't know if that was a great career decision, but he did have Number to Count the first year, and she just ripped through everything. Won the Matron, the Frisette, the Salima, the Gardenia. And they brought her back a week later in the Gardenia to meet Reaver Ridge. You know, boy versus the girl. And they gave out buttons at the track. The king versus... I like the king in the Garden State. I like the queen in the Garden State. Had like 35,000 people. Anyway, so I gave a whole talk on that. And I gave a history of Prince Quillo, who's obviously was Secretary's broodmare sire. The whole history of him in Europe and escaping the Nazis and running for $1,500. And, you know, it's an amazing story there. So people seem to enjoy that. And Steve Jordan, who was secretary in Reaver Ridge's Hot Walker, was there telling stories. And we led tours around the farm, told stories there, went to visit Something Royal's grave, which is actually on a private Wow. property, which is not part of the Meadow Event Park. It's actually on a woman's property. And we had to get special permission to go there. But we went there, and I told stories there, and it was great. We had a wonderful nice. Time. Anybody who likes horse racing, don't have to be Secretariat fan, but you know, it helps. But I mean, if you just want to have a good time with good people, and I highly suggest it. Next year is going to be huge. That's Secretariat's the 50th anniversary.
Right. Right.
Yeah, his 50th birthday. Not 50th. You know, 50th anniversary.
Right.
Of his birthday. So next year is going to be huge. And then if you can't attend that, you know, come October, we always have the Secretariat Festival in Lexington, and also tours of farms and a lot of memorabilia, a lot of stuff for purchase. Great new stuff. Great, fantastic Reaver Ridge and Secretariat hats and shirts and everything. Some really nice photographs by somebody we all know and love.
Tony
Leonard? Who are we talking about?
No, I'm
me.
I thought maybe yeah. You know, I thought maybe you were.
Do Polaroids count?
No, that's his. You know, some of his old. Yeah, his old. No,
are you kidding? My color photographs of Secretariat. Selling like hotcakes. They're all.
How about
they're
that?
They're all personalized. Each photo has a story with it. And how the picture came about, and they're all unusual.
You know what? That's great.
Yeah, no, they're great. You've shown them on Facebook. I didn't realize that.
If you want to go back, that the first time that Steve and I actually became, you know, buddies was, I think it was in 93. I'm throwing that back, and actually I was thinking about this last night. It was for the Haskell. Steve used to come, you know, do the three-year-old sure. deal. And, of course, he was at Monmouth. But, and the one year, you remember this, Steve? The one year that the plane got stuck with the jocks, either out of Chicago or out of Atlantic City. There was some big, some or a horse got stuck out there. Anyway, it was a week running. And I remember Kissin' Chris won. Right? You go, who? because a couple horses, David Bell, showed up. But here's this guy with a camera going up and down, and we had a steak barn then, and most of the horses were, you know, together in the steak barn. And here's this guy, you know, taking pictures, and I was like, who's this goofball? And, of course it was Steve, right? Who are you?
Your initial impression was correct.
Well, we're all goofballs. What are you kidding me? But I just remember that. And since then, I've seen you whenever we would run into each other, who knows where, on what backside, but you always had a camera, and you were, you know, and I remember going, oh, why don't I do that? You know, you just remember, but
the funny thing is that my daughter's kidding around with me. A friend of mine had, a buddy from when I was a kid, had dug up a picture of me and my old friends when we all took a train to into the city and went to the Statue of Liberty, and we were probably maybe 12, 13 years old, something like that, at the most, maybe even more. And there was an old black and white photo of us in front of the Statue of Liberty. And there I am with a camera. My daughter got a kick out of it. She said, you still got it. Even back then, when you were a kid, you went everywhere with a camera. You know, this is one of those old box,
It's Instamatic.
Yeah, well, the thing is, the Instamatic is when I have my famous picture of Dr. Fager that I took, that I wrote a whole column about, photographing Dr. Fager going out for a workout the week before, except my first time ever at Saratoga. And I went, I had just gone out and bought it. It was a little Kodak Brownie Instamatic.
And you remember the,
that I treasure.
You had the little flash cube. And, I remember my dad explaining to my mom that, the little flash on there didn't project like 100 feet, you know, where you were taking a picture of a mountain or something. Let's put the flash on there. But,
right. Well, even now, I graduated to bigger cameras. You know, I had two Canons, a Canon FTB and a Canon F1, you know, I had the lenses and everything. Now I'm back to the little little Canon. It's about the size of a cigarette package. I mean, it's just a little camera, but takes really
they take great pictures.
Really sure,
great
pictures.
But I just like recording it. And now, listen, I've got all those photo albums of my daughter with everybody.
Famous horses, right. Exactly.
Yeah, it's a little firm. So, I mean, you spectacular bid. I mean, she's had her picture taken, Secretariat. You name a great horse, and Mandy's had her picture taken with it. It became like an obsession to me.
It's which is great.
That's great.
And then you recreated it with the baby, which is cool. Steve, we got a lot to do, and I want to get through the races. Give us your reaction to the way the Florida Derby came out, and a quick thought about Pliska Parfait. Of course, we had Brendan Walsh on Tuesday after he got back from Dubai, and they're excited. They're going forward.
Well, I think this Maximum Security winning that race was right at this point is the best thing to happen to the Derby Trail. You know, it was getting where it was like so, not that this isn't confusing even more in some ways, but, you know, people looking, trying to grasp onto somebody. And the thing with Game Winner and Improbable is that they've been seen so infrequently that we've sort of lost contact with them. We really don't know that much about them anymore. And the other horses, you could just grasp onto, try, but really not grasp onto in a firm way. So you're just looking for somebody exciting. We thought maybe Hidden Scroll, but he got such a late start. This horse, the story behind him, you know, former $16,000 claimer and starter. I mean, he runs in the Florida Derby. It was his first time in his life he had run against non-claimers. He's the only one against claimers in all three of his starts. And you didn't know the intrigue around him, where you just didn't know how good he was. 18 and a half lengths. And, I mean, he ran three times. And his average margin was like 10 lengths. You just didn't know what to expect. And then you watch the race, and if you look at the Thoroughgraph numbers going in, he obviously had a monster Thoroughgraph number coming off that starter allowance race where he got a huge buyer, you know,
102,
when he got a big Thoroughgraph number. And then you look at the other horses, you know, the Code of Honor, and you look at Bourbon War, and you look at Harvey Wallbanger, and they really weren't, they're not fast. I mean, you say, I don't know how good these horses are, but on Thoroughgraph, they're not really fast. Bourbon War had run a fast race, an allowance race, and then regressed quite a bit off of that. So you just didn't know. And then, you know, this horse does what he does, and he goes out there and sets his, you know, relatively slow pace. And then you see the finish, and you say, oh, look, who was that that finished second? Everybody's saying, we watched it there, you know, in Virginia. The whole group was there. We were watching it. And everybody said, who's second? I said, I don't know. I have no clue who that is. And then I started looking down, and I see who it is, and I said, oh, my God, he beat a 70-1 maiden. I said, oh, I said, this is going to confuse things even more. Then I started looking at the race, and I said, you know what? This was pretty legitimate. First of all, I looked at the maidens, Bud Express, and his autograph number was fast as anybody else in the race.
Correct.
He ran a 4. And I said, everybody else was running 4s, 5s, 3.5s. I said, this horse is right there with the others, maiden or mm-hmm. no maiden. But then I started looking at this race, and I see he comes home in 35-4.
Yep.
On the lead. I mean, it's fast when you see a horse come from way out of it to come home. If you can break 36 for the last 3/8 as a come from behind horse, but when you can do it on the lead, I mean, that's pretty legitimate. So I started looking at this race, and he's saying, you know what? They didn't have any clue what kind of horse they had. We don't have any clue. This horse could be a budding superstar. I mean, he is undefeated. And his average margin of victory now is 9.5 lengths. He's, you know, he ran to me, the most impressive prep. It was a gap between the second horse and the third horse. I mean, it's everything you want to look for. You look at him physically. You know, he's a beautiful stride horse. He's professional. He doesn't monkey around at all. He doesn't do anything wrong. Yeah, who knows? You know, maybe we've got some kind of a, you know, major star here. So I look back now, you know, and I put the horse 6. You know, when I, you know, you do it, you know, I come back from Virginia, and I said, oh, I'll put him 6. I can't leave out all the rebel horses, and I'm stuck with Spinoff because I still like that horse. I look at this horse now, I say, you know what? I could easily put this horse number 1. It wouldn't, why not? I mean, just take a shot. I remember last year I was reluctant to put Justify number 1 because he was going to go into the Derby with 3 starts. But things are so different now. But the weird thing about it is that like 3 months ago, if you had told, you know, Gary West, say, by the way, Gary, you're going to win the Kentucky Derby. It's not going to be with Tamewood. It's going to be by a $16,000 claimer. I mean, it's incredible. Plus, he's got a horse. He's got a legitimate horse in the wood.
Yeah. Final Jeopardy.
You know, Final Jeopardy's coming off a very good fire. And, you know, listen, we've seen what maiden winners do. We saw what, you know, By My Standards did, coming off a maiden race. The game has changed. Horses can come from maiden races now. You can come from claiming races. You know, the wood's loaded with former claimers. It's a different game. I mean, you can find your Derby horse anywhere now.
Steve, you know, buyer fan or not, the horse we're talking about that you're talking about has the only buyer figure with 100 or better. He's got 2 of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah,
I've got the
no.
Yeah,
he actually regressed. He went from
102
to 101.
He's essentially paired up both the first two first two starts, and now these next two, he's paired up, which is a very healthy pattern. And he's a May foal, May 16th.
May 15th, I know. He's a late foal. And yet, you know, he had problems early. His knees just never came together. His knees were separate. And they just basically said, you know, listen, you send him to Jason Service, calling. So basically, he was a call.
Yep.
You know, Gary West got over 100 horses. He said, you know, just listen, take these horses, these maidens, and just run them cheap and we'll get rid of them. Because, they have to get rid of them. They got so many horses. And then my favorite line of all was one day, Jason Service, you know, they're about to run them. He said, run them for 16 and that's it. And finally, he's got close for the time for him to make his debut. And this is my favorite quarter of the year, where Jason Service calls up Ben Glass, who's Gary West's racing manager and bloodstock agent, and been together for 25 years. And he said, you know, this horse may be better than we think. That's maybe the understatement of the year. And Ben said, listen, And they had just sold his sister for $5,000. They basically gave the stallion away because nobody wanted to stand him. They had sold the dam for $11,000. I mean, there was nothing there. The horse had the sore knees, and he said, "Just yeah, just run cheap." So it's just a great story. You gotta love it. I mean, this is what the Derby Trail is all about. Stories well, like this. So I'm rooting for this horse. And can you imagine him and Game Winner coming down the stretch head and head in the Kentucky Derby? It's like a 1930s movie. You know,
that's
champion,
true. That's
the
true.
Champion, the champion from California, and his little $16,000 claimer. You know, it's bluegrass versus postman.
Right. Well, and Steve, you know, you listened to the Ben Glass piece on Monday, and that's why I brought Ben forward, because there was so many more elements to running him, you know, at that price in his debut, because, you know, earlier in November they had given away the mare for $11,000 with a full sibling, and then of course you mentioned the sister.
Pioneer denial.
Ben told the whole story. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, I called Ben. I said, "I got to get the story." I called Ben and I said, "Ben, you got to tell me the story." He says, "Oh yeah." He says, "I just told the whole story on Steve Vick." I said, "Of course, Steve beat me to it. Of course, what else is new?"
No, you beat me to a lot of those. There was so much more. There was, you know, and people were being, and they're continuing to be ridiculous about the debut at 16. It's funny how everybody loved Charismatic running for 32, but this horse, because of Jason's involvement, there's the derision and you know the eye rolling going on, and I find it I understand where it's coming from, but Ben Glass answered the questions directly, and I appreciated that.
He took responsibility for it, because Jason Service is getting all the heat, saying, "Oh, yeah, he blew it. He didn't know what the heck. He got lucky." Well, they did get lucky. But, I mean, Ben, you know, Ben took to his, you know, I shouldn't use the word responsibility, because he did what he did the right thing at the time.
Yeah, they were in the process.
Said,
yeah.
You never know in this game. You just never know. There's actually been a Kentucky Derby winner, by the way, that ran for cheaper than $16,000. A good trivia question. I actually ran for $7,500 and won the Derby.
And in the last 50 years?
No.
Any guesses? No, several decades ago. Let's put it this way. After him came a slew of great horses and Triple Crown winners.
Oh, so it's got to be, you're talking 70.
Stop right there.
Proud.
70.
No. 70? 69.
Proud Clarion.
Imagine, no, not Proud Clarion. 68.
He won the Bluegrass at 35-1.
Dust Commander?
Yeah.
Good job, Dust Commander.
Dust Commander ran for $7,500. And he came from nowhere. I mean, he was 35-1 in the Bluegrass, and he won that, and then paid a big, paid a good price in the Derby.
Derby done.
We needed
Derby Don Combs, right?
Exactly. He's still training.
Get a load of this, by the way. Speaking of that, last year at the Secretariat Festival in Kentucky, two of the guys who were signing pictures and stuff like that, we had Don Combs and Mike Manganiello, who rode him. We had Dust Commander as jockey and the trainer at the Secretariat Festival last year. That was great because Don Combs is still training out of the training center there, Lexington.
Yep.
Lexington or Louisville?
No, he's at
Lexington.
Okay.
You know, right on Paris Pike, they got the training center, which is where the Secretariat Festival is held. Got the barns there and
nice.
Beautiful
facility
there.
Well, Steve, simultaneously, let's also, as part of this, and of course, Bodie Express, and it gets Gustavo Delgado back to the Derby, Mahesto a couple of years ago, and the posture for code of honor and bourbon war. You know, obviously with a 49 second half, it was going 112 three quarters. It was going to be tough for them, you know, to close in. Any feel for, you know, how viable the two of them are going forward?
Yeah, you know, I would put a moderate right now. I'm not going to discount either one of them. I would lean a little bit more towards Bourbon War because I know he's got the big kick and he's more professional. And he was farther back, and I think he was victimized. He didn't make a move on the turn, but he just couldn't sustain it. And listen, he's not going to outclose a 35-4, the final 3/8. And, he just came up a bit empty. My thing with Code of Honor is that he's still a little bit green, you know? He's still weaving a little bit, and he runs with his head up, and, you know, I don't know. Right now, if I had to choose between the two, I'd have to give a little bit of an edge to Bourbon War because I just think he's more consistent. He's more professional when you see him run, and I think if he gets a fast pace in a derby, you could see a big rebound effort. I'm just not sure yet of Code of Honor. People think Code of Honor, Shirk McGahee, William Farrer. Code of Honor does not have the greatest mile and a quarter pedigree. There's a lot of milers in his pedigree, and a lot of speed influences. But, I mean, I like the horse. I still like the horse to some extent, but he needs to mature a little bit. He wanders around the stretch too much. He just doesn't look, even in Fountain of Youth, you know, he's pulling himself up. You know, he barely lasted. He had that race won. You make your move too soon with him, and you got to be careful because he was pulling himself up at the end of that race, and Bourbon War was flying at him. But there's a lot of, there question marks. What about War of Will? I mean, it would be a miracle to have him come back and win the Derby. But, I don't know if he's going to recover from that. But, he's still a good horse. If he got anything out of that race, if Mark Cassidy works the heck out of him and you see him working, seven furlongs and 124 or something like that, and he's back, he's still a pretty good horse himself. And so there's going to be a lot of question marks, a lot of intriguing top horses that you really don't know what to make of.
Well, let's talk about the ones we're going to have to make something of on Saturday, Steve. Let's run through the Wood, the Bluegrass, and the Derby here.
Yeah, well, you had earlier mentioned just quickly touching on the UAE Derby.
Yeah, go ahead.
Listen, both horses ran well. I thought Grey Magician actually ran the better race. He lost so much ground. In fact, I completely forgot to pull Thoroughgraph numbers on both those races. But I'm sure Grey Magician got a much better Thoroughgraph number than Plus Care Parfait. At least I would think, because he saved ground the whole way. And I thought Grey Magician, I thought he was a winner at the head of the stretch. And I thought he ran a very strong race. But I don't know how good either one of those two horses are. It wasn't the greatest field. They weren't world beaters. And the thing I don't like about it is that it's one thing being in Dubai and then coming to the United States to run. But look at horses that go there for the World Cup. These are tough, older horses. They run the World Cup. It takes them 2 or 3 months before they come back to race. Now you got 3-year-olds, and you expect them to make that trip there and back and then run the Derby in 5 weeks. And like I said, they weren't world beaters. So, I look at them with a bit of reservation whether they can come back in 5 weeks if they're running a very hard mile and 3/16. So, anyway, that's just a quick take on the UAE Derby. But notice this weekend is going to be it's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait. What race would you like to start with?
Roll right on with the Wood.
What's that?
Roll right on with the Wood. I noticed you kept Omaha Beach on top. My current, did I look at the right week, April 2nd? That's where we are. You still have Omaha Beach on top, right?
I do, and I have to admit, I probably shouldn't admit this, but part of it is the fact that I would love to see Dick Mandela and Rick Ford win the Derby. Maybe when you're indecisive about something, you can't help but fall back in a little bit on the personal level. And, I'm just rooting for Mandela and Rick Porter. It's a great story with both of them. And I just liked the horse. I fell in love with him when he got beat. When he got beat by Nolo Contesto. And he was 8 lengths ahead of the third horse. And there was something classy about the horse. I contacted Rick right after that race. And I said, Rick, I think you got a really good horse here. And we've been in constant contact the whole way through emails, keeping updated on the horse. He's got a lot of class. He's got a lot of speed. Can he go a mile and a quarter? I'm not sure yet. I don't know. I think so. But, there's nobody else that I'm enamored with that I'm going to put number one. So for now, I'll put him number one. If there's a horse that can replace him, it would be Maximum Security right now. And we'll see what comes out of these.
We'll find out this week. And I told you that little story, and I think I mentioned it on the air, about Omaha Beach. Back in his early days after his second start, and at the time I didn't have the dates and the PPs in front of me, but he opened up at Del Mar, going a mile on the turf, finished a respectable third, got beat 2 lengths at even money, and then came back, and we had a at Santa Anita here, must have been close to opening day on September 29th, came back in another mile maiden race, and he got beat a nose. By horse, Flying Scotsman, who's not a bad horse, but I got beat a nose. And so maybe a week later, a couple days later, something like that, Mandel came in the office, and once again, another guy who, will rarely, out of the blue, just come in and ask for a race. And he said, gee, I wonder if we can get another maiden race up. I'd like to send this horse to the Breeders' Cup. And I'm thinking to myself, what Breeders' Cup? What? Breeders' Cup's, pretty soon. And he had, eyes of trying to get this horse in the Breeders' Cup mile. And, when certain guys come in and mention things like that I was talking about earlier, it kind of sticks with you. So I always remember that horse, Omaha Beach. And then, lo and behold, he continues to good. And then, the second time out going on the dirt, he explodes and then does what he does there. But, it's amazing. You wonder why these certain guys are in the Hall of Fame. And they can spot a horse when he's got that much potential, especially that early in the career. So when we had talked and we were talking about how you had him so high and just jumping on the bandwagon a little bit with you because I had that little bit of a push from the back of my head doing that. So when a guy like Richard Mandel thinks that highly of a horse to try and even think about rushing him along to try and get to the Breeders' Cup. That sticks with you, and I'm actually just sitting right beside you there with Omaha Beach until he does something wrong. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, and Gary Young yesterday said he's continued on very nicely out of the Rebel.
I love his last workout. Well, Rick, do you realize how similar this story is to the story you told me last year with Justify?
It's almost
the exact same story, except with a different trainer. Maybe history will repeat itself. You told me. Your story was so great with Justify is that I led my recap column with that. I mean, that was I actually loved that story. When you told it to me, I said, "Wow, I got my if this horse wins the Derby, I got my opening."
Well, we talked as we've done over the years, this time of year to discuss the California horses and our thoughts on the Derby, and I remember I had that story bottled up inside, and like I told you, it's like a doctor-patient privilege. I didn't know who to tell, and I didn't really tell that many. But when I told you, and I said you can't say anything about this. So you got to keep this. And you said, yeah, but if he wins, I'm going to use it. I said, yeah, go ahead.
Exactly. I told you. I said if he wins the Derby, this is my lead. And this is way back. I mean, this is earlier.
Oh yeah. This is February.
And you said the same thing when Bob Baffert said something like that. For anybody who didn't know it, Bob Baffert came into Rick's office, and he had a maiden race. And he said, look, this race has to go because I got a horse in there that could win the Kentucky Derby. And this is in February, in mid-February, and there's a horse that had never run before. And
yeah.
and Baffert had all these other, he had like 3 or 4 Derby horses.
He had McKenzie.
He had some of the favorites for the Derby. Oh, yeah. He had McKenzie and Solomini and several horses. Tells you about a horse that didn't even run yet that's going to win the Kentucky Derby in a first-time starter. I mean, it's great. great stuff.
It was a good way to go out. I mean, it's my last three-year-old year here, I got to say, with the Justify situation. But anyway, yeah. carry on with the wood.
Yeah, but looking at the wood, this is like a potpourri of horses. I mean, again, you just don't know what to expect. The one thing I want to ask you this, Steve, and I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I'm curious if you don't, especially to get your take. But don't you think that Greg Sacco's two horses are both in the wrong spot, or is it just me?
I don't know. I don't know.
They should be in each other's races. I mean, to me, Jovia, to me, looks like a sprinter. He ran a terrific race. You know, he couldn't keep up with Always Mining last time. He got crushed in that race, but he ran really good in the sprint. And Mind Control, coming off those two flat mile races by Stay Thirsty, why wouldn't you try to make a Derby horse out of this horse just to see? I mean, the Bayshore. I mean, I don't get it. I don't understand with his pedigree. And you know, he comes from off the pace. He's a game horse coming off of two, you know, really, really strong efforts at a mile. And you drop him back to that race, and the other horse you run in the wood. I don't get it. I mean, to me, it's completely backwards.
I don't know. The way Mind Control idled late in the Gotham.
He held off Instagram. He would not let Instagram get by him. And Heichel just came flying. He never saw Heichel.
Well,
he just came
flying
on the outside after 44 two-half a mile. But every one of his races, nobody gets by that horse.
I don't know, Steve. The first thing in my mind, because the way the race was unfolding, I thought, okay, Mind Control is going to win this. And the way it ended, the first thing I thought was, all right, he's going to be better off going one turn, and or shortening up anyway. And I don't know. As for Jovia, he wasn't going to get to Always Mining, and but that was a good effort stretching out. And you know, he's out of that Warfront mare. I can understand.
He ran a great race in the Wingfield, at seven furlongs. Yeah. But listen, it's one Derby. You're going to take a shot with the horses. I'm just looking at the pedigree. You know, if you look at Mind Control's pedigree, he's got a strong pedigree, top and bottom. I don't know. Listen, he may be right. He's the trainer. I'm just looking at this as an outsider. But my initial reaction is that Mind Control is certainly done. He's a hopeful winner. I would certainly, give him a shot to be a Derby horse. I mean, it's not like he's shortening him up to run in a Grade One or something like that. He's living in the Bayshore. I would take a shot. If you run him in the wood and he gets tired, then you shorten him up. I don't know. But he's the trainer, not me, so I just threw that in there. Getting back to this race, you got another weird horse in there with his Hoffa's Union that we have absolutely no idea
how good he is. Yeah,
what to expect here? I mean, you don't know. It's one start. So I mean, if he runs big here, if he runs, let's say second or even first, now you got horses going in the Derby off of two lifetime starts. But like a lot of people have forgotten about Tax. Who's coming off a good buyer and a good race. But if you remember that the race he won in the Withers, it was a three-horse photo, and a lot of people thought that not that Brady was actually the best horse. That he dug in there. He was on the pace the whole way and dug in. It was actually coming back at Tax at the wire. Here's another story. He's a horse that was claimed. But we don't know how good he is. I mean, he's bred to run all day. We don't know about Not That Brady. He certainly had an excuse last time out. If he's doing well now, the obvious horse is Tacitus. Again, Final Jeopardy. Coming off that allowance victory, we don't know how good that horse is. He's certainly bred, to run a distance. We really don't know, and there's not much there's not a lot of speed in here. I mean, Pletcher's other horse, Over Deliver, has got, he's the only one that really got true sprint speed in here. I mean, we really don't know, except for Jovia. If he is a sprinter, he's got to have to bust out of there from the far outside, so we don't know. So, you know, and with Heichel, again, you know, a lot of people, you know, on my blog saying, how could you not have Heichel in the top 12 or so? Well, you know, most of the polls, he's any, you know, he's anywhere from like 13th to 16th or so, which is where I have him. But his pedigree is just inundated with sprinters and milers. And I don't mind horses like who are closing, who are closers at around one turn. But when you're 6 lengths off at the eighth pole and close, sometimes that indicates that you're a one-turn closer. Whether he is or not, I really don't know. But I want him to prove it. I want to see what he does at two turns when he's not running behind a 44-2 half mile.
Steve, let me ask you one quick question. We were talking about the Tampa Bay earlier. So we have between the Bluegrass and the Wood, we've got 6 horses running back out of that Tampa Bay race. So that is either going to be a killer key race that moves forward, or it's a race if do you want to just put a line through it? Which way you leaning?
Well, first of all, if I had a better horse in here, I mean, I don't know what Archie's going to be, but I've been every week I debate whether to put Outshine in the top 12, and there was just no room for him. But you know, I thought Outshine ran a terrific race in the Tampa Derby, and he just is a horse that's getting good right now. You know, he's on a good thoroughbred pattern. If he improves one more step, he's going to have to overcome an outside post position because he's more of a stalker. So he's in jeopardy of getting hung a bit wide. But the funny thing is that you look in the beginning of the year, and like Bob Baffert had like 6 Derby horses, legitimate Derby horses, and Todd Pletcher had none. I mean, Todd Pletcher, I mean, he gets to the Derby this year. Whatever horses he had were not running well. Now he could have 4. I mean, he's got 2 in the top 12 already. Outshine certainly could be in there. Yeah, when he's got a few others, he's got So Alive. You know, we'll have to see how good he is. But, he's making a late run with a lot of these late-developing horses. So, The thing I find intriguing a lot about Outshine, if he runs a big race in here, if you're Johnny Velasquez, what do? You go with Outshine or do you go with Spinoff? That's a toughie. That's a tough decision to make. And whatever decision he makes, that's the way I would lean, you know, in my Derby dozen. I would have to go with the horse he chooses because he would know best. But look, I'd love to see Heichel run well for Kieran McLaughlin to get him in the Derby. Tax is a great story. In fact, after the winners, I got an email from a co-owner of Tax, appalled that he's not in the top 12. I said, "Well, what did I tell you? It's in a 3-horse photo, you know." I don't know. I mean, but people take this seriously. Then I'd love to. It's a great story. I love stories, and this horse has got a great story. I'd love to see in there. Not that Brady, who's got a great story. You know, being on Elise's Booby Trap, which is a great story into itself. So this is a race. I mean, just sit back and enjoy. If Tacitus wins this race, then he's legitimate. But he's still green. He's still got several things to overcome. He's got he runs with his head up, and I didn't like him at all in the Tampa Bay Derby. I mean, you know, coming off a neck maiden win, he'd been out for several months, and he looked terrible in his workouts, and it turns out he's not a very good worker either. He looked awful in his works. But he ran such a professional race. I said, where the heck did this come from? I know first time Lasix, but I mean, still, I mean,
is this part of that cross-country pick 3? Sounds like that's an all-button race to me. From
the Wood?
From the Wood.
Listen, you can bet just about anybody in this race. You know, you just don't know.
Well, and speaking of which,
Jason Derby's got 2 horses in here. You know, this other horse coming off the maiden race is a big win.
Gramps Little Tots.
You shouldn't be read at Grumps Little Tots. There's a lot of strange named horses this year too, by the way.
See,
you know, and how about Mets Wizard? Which he's had like six trainers already.
He's been claimed repeatedly.
You know, so you know, it's just sort of algorithms. I mean, you know, obviously he's got to, you know, step up. You know, but he's, you know, one race he's on a lead, the other race he's coming from off the base, and then I don't know what we've got with this horse, but you know, he's another $16,000 horse who was claimed, but he's been claimed three times in the last four races. So it's another crazy story. You got three claimers in this race.
Steve, I've got to get the rest of this done. I've got Eric Hamelbeck I want to slip in, and I was supposed to get to Mike Joyce as well today.
All right, I'll just press through the bluegrass. I'm not giving up. I'm the only person in this universe that still likes win that has him in there. I'm not giving up on him. I just think he's coming up to a big race, so hopefully he runs well. And I'm still not giving up on Dreammaker as well. I know he ran terribly, but on his best day. You know, Vacoma obviously is the favorite, but I'm still a big fan of win. So I mean, if I'm betting, that's the horse I'm betting there. And Sammy the Derby, well, you know, what can you say? It's, you know, it's the three horse or four horse race actually. I haven't given up on Nolan Contesto either. I think he's a lot better than he showed last time. And I guess I would have to look, you know, just lean a little bit more towards a Roadster. Breaking from the rail, he's got to be up there and press Instagram. Instagram should run huge here, but to me, this is a race to just watch, see how Game Winner runs, and see if we get Roadster or Instagram into the Derby or Nola Contesto. So, yes, short field, but interesting enough. Hollendorf, his other horse, looks like he's an unknown coming back on the dirt. He's been running well on the grass and the poly and the. To Peter, so it's good. I mean, the three. I think there were three very interesting races.
Well, we'll have potentially we'll get some horses that jump in, and then there's going to be some decision making to be made by people like Blaine Wright, who right now is sitting chilly at Sunland, and if he's got to run at Arkansas or in the Lexington, he seems like he's going to do it, but we'll know more as the points lay out. And there's also the last of the, should also mention a couple of quick things, the last of the Derby future wagers Friday starts tomorrow. We'll get a quick hit on that. And Hammer, you mentioned the cross country. The cross country is really fun. It's the Madison, and then it goes to New York to the Carter, then back to Keeneland for the Ashland, then back to New York for the Wood, and then it ends with the Bluegrass. So it's a pick five, and it's about as good a sequence and is challenging. I suppose World of Trouble will be a big lean in the Carter for a lot of people to try to, you know, keep the budget down. But it's a really, really challenging ticket building exercise, this week's cross country pick five. Steve, enjoy it, and we'll talk to you next week from Arkansas.
Oh, you're going to be there? Oh, good. That's going to be a barn burner there. You know, Dan didn't mention Galilean, but there's another horse I haven't given up on. I don't know what he thinks about him, but it's, you know, it's a tough spot, but it'll be very interesting. But that's going to be the big decider with the three big horses in there. But have fun out there.
I appreciate it, Steve. Asking everybody.
Rick? Always a pleasure, Steve, and I'm sure we'll be talking many times before the first Saturday in May.
I guess Steve.
He pulled the plug.
I guess he pulled the plug. Eric Hamelbeck is in town for the RCI meeting, and I've also got to get a one thing that we didn't get to early this morning. That's my fault. A visit with Mike Joyce. The TVG on Sunday has got the PDJF telethon again, second time. So we do owe Mike a call. That figures that the minute I turn to get Eric in here, his phone rings, and so we'll have Eric in a second. But I I wanted to let me Casey, let me give you this, and we'll get Mike right away on the phone here too, and get this visit in. Mike Joyce, I guess is going to be the anchor on the.
He's
fundraiser.
That's a good choice.
Oh, he's got such a great sense of humor, and
he makes the game fun.
Yeah,
you know, it's a lot of serious stuff goes on, but you need a guy like him to just kind of just make it. Let us realize here, you know, it's just a game.
Well, he in particular, he and Andy Serling are tremendous fun together, and what Mike Joyce, he's got a great self deprecating kind of a humor, and he's great for kind of putting the pin in the balloon, you know, when there's a topic that is being either being taken too seriously or
he's great.
Needs a couple of come down a couple of notches.
Yeah.
Joyce is great for diffusing.
I enjoy him with Kurt Hoover.
Yeah.
When I watch them, when they're paired up on the weekend or at some point, they're volley back and forth.
Well, and the whole idea of a telethon was really, I'm surprised it took as long as it did for that to come to fruition, too. Right? I mean, it's natural.
They had to get the rights away from Jerry Lewis.
Well, there it is. And we'll have Eric in a second. But Mike Joyce joining us. And Mike, sorry, I'm about 2 hours late, I think. No? Did we lose him, Case? No. Casey, did you drop Mike? Mike drop, so to speak.
What are some of the facts of the PDJF?
Well, of course.
We're waiting for Mike.
Well, we'll get it from Mike, but the PDJF is basically keeping a
I meant the location of the telethon. No, the where is it? When is it?
Well, it's Sunday. It's Sunday, I think this is the second year, and they've had a great. I mean, the thing was a huge success last year. We're going to try it again. And Mike Joyce, good morning. No.
Well, speaking of that, you know, they've done a good job marketing the PDJF.
Overall,
disabled. Because you know what happens? I found out, and it's another thing I learned during the fire situation, people want to give. They just need to know where and have confidence in where they're giving money is actually going to the recipient. And, you know, I found that out down there at the fire. People just have a look in their eye. What can I do? Please point me in a direction I can help, whether it's monetarily or, you know, with objects or donations, they want it. So I'm glad that the industry has signaled, has zeroed in on this, and it seems to be that one of the major, alphabets that we go on. But the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund is just, it goes to a good cause. Everybody knows what it goes to, and it's not sit back and explain where the money goes. So,
no.
In one sense, it's probably taken so long because we have so many charities out there. I never know which one to point to. So I'm glad they've done a good job of zeroing in on this. And something like this is just grows and grows and grows. It's contagious. More people, send stuff in to be auctioned off, and then listeners can just either bid away or just send in a donation.
Well, and also one of the fun things in terms of the phone bank, the phone bank is going to be manned by nothing but Hall of Famers. You're going to call in, and Pat Day is going to pick up, or Lafitte Pinkai Jr.
Or Julie or
Stevie Coffin. Chris McCarron is going to be there.
You got to watch that word. They can't man phones anymore. You got to people.
They'll be answering the phones.
They'll be answering the phones.
They'll be answering the
people
phones.
People will
okay.
be answering the phones.
All right, McCarron, Sandy Hawley, and I'm pretty sure that Johnny D. book the appearance. Johnny, Johnny's still taking calls
for Sandy
Hawley.
Yeah.
And Ramon is going to be picking up phones too, Ramon Dominguez. So you're going to call in, and it should be tremendous fun. There's a sweepstakes with every donation. This was really a great concept. I think we're going to try Mike. Something's weird. I mean, we've been on the phone for an hour between Haskin and Tony, and for some reason Mike's either not hearing us, and we're not hearing him.
Maybe we should try him on the burner phone.
That's true. Casey's reminding me. You know, they had that comp. We had this happen. I think with Seth Merrow a couple of weeks ago with Comcast, and Casey had the Comcast people come out and check. Well, all right. So you know what? Maybe we'll try Mike. If it's not going to work, we'll try Mike tomorrow. And he's going to try one more time. Mike just sent me a text too, Case. He says that as soon as you push the link, it goes dead. So we'll try it one more time. In the meantime, Eric Hamelbeck is in town, and I didn't want to miss an opportunity, Eric, to have you answer a question that the public is asking, and in regards to the situation here.
Sure.
The various points of pressure that are being forced upon Santa Anita and so forth, and really everything that's transpired, the racing community is curious why there's been no external statements. Whether it was from NTRA or from HBPA, explain how, when there's an incident or a topic like this, the industry spokes machine can work or won't work, or why.
Well, I think there probably is not one answer for that, Steve. And again, thank you for throwing me on here. One of the things we learned in the situation at Aqueduct in 2015 is when you go through a crisis management situation, it actually is very important not to, quote-unquote, speak to the public errantly and prematurely. We follow a very close pattern. I know that CHRB is well under investigations. Again, I think the most important fact that people need to understand is that every one of these fatalities, every one of these tragedies is being necropsied. And that will be important information. I'm afraid to tell you, and I know the answer, is there will never be one thing that we can point a finger at and say that it is this fault. That is probably the only thing I am 100% sure of. These rash of breakdowns have been a tragic loss to those who support the horses, who work with the horses. I think the grief that a barn feels is not conveyed by the current public media. And that, to me, is a tragedy. Being a working horseman, if you will, for so many years. and I worked for the Stronach Group for almost 15 years. When things like this happen, we certainly don't want knee-jerk reactions. But also we understand that sometimes people are clamoring and want something done. What people don't realize, and I would say it's our fault as an industry, people don't realize the hard work that the stewards go through. They don't understand the amount of testing and scrutiny and veterinarian examinations that our industry goes through on a daily basis. And that's something we maybe should be doing a better job of. And I can't deny that. But ultimately, when we're all kind of working on a day-to-day basis, nobody takes the opportunity to plan for something like this. And when it does occur, you get exposed as to not being ready. And, you know, the National HBPA, we did put out two statements,
right.
And in support of an independent investigation. But I think and I hope what was conveyed most is that we support the horsemen here because we know, as HBPA affiliates and me personally as a horseman, this is devastating. The grief that one goes through when you lose one of these horses in your stable, I know we're getting painted by animal rights extremists as almost treating them as products. And that is the most offensive thing that a true horseman such as myself can hear. Because until you've had a horse die in your arms or you've been through that tragedy, you don't know what it feels like. And while they are not domesticated animals, they are a part of the lives of the horsemen that deal with them on a day-to-day basis. And for us to get ridiculed as we don't care, I think that's the most offensive thing to me. Now, going back to your point, I think that certainly I feel as if we had an organization, one of the national groups that's has members of everybody on their board, certainly could have said some things, but also we're respectful in the fact that it's the track's responsibility. It's the commissioner's responsibility, the CHRB, and I know very well, I'm a big fan of Miss Madeline. They are working their butts off to try to make sure they understand what happened. We embrace the fact that this is a tragedy. We know that these incidences cause extreme grief, and it is not something that the public understands if they are on the outside of the racing industry. We don't want them to happen. We certainly don't intend for them to happen. And one thing I can assure you is that nobody sent a horse out that morning thinking that something devastating was going to happen to them.
And the mechanism, the mechanics of responses to this, we discussed it 3 years ago
right.
at the HBPA convention at the time, and my own view, having having led one of the sessions, managed to get criticized for calling for a uniform
right.
mechanical response team, and here we are 4 years later, and it's very strange on that front. I can do this though with we're going to try Mike one more time, and certainly the response to calls for support when it comes to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, all the different functions. I was at Frank and Dino's when 2 weeks ago for Carlo Vacarese's fundraiser, and the telethon in its second year on Sunday on TVG was really a natural. Mike Joyce, are you there?
Yeah, it actually worked this time. Can you hear me?
There we
go. I can actually hear
you. Woo! Nice job. Rick Hammerly's here too, Mike.
What's
Hammer,
going on,
how
Mike?
You doing, brother?
I'm doing wonderful. Just glad to hear your voice, and we're just talking about your telethon, and Jerry Lewis was one of your childhood idols, and you're going to carry on the telethon tradition. And second year going in, and we talked about that this has already made the news, and this is a great spot. So tell us about it, when, where, and how, and.
So the when, where, and how, where, everywhere. So we're going to be, I'm going to be based at TVG Studios. We have a number of Hall of Fame riders, both active and retired. We have a number of recipients coming into the studio. We're going to have jockeys joining us on set at Keeneland and Santa Anita. So everywhere we're broadcasting from live on Sunday, you will have representatives from the jockey community, from the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, and you know, it's kind of a multi-purpose for the telethon. Of course, we want to raise money, but I've been on the board of the PDJF now. This is 4 years. That last year, they're three-year terms, and you have to get reelected. So I was just reelected last year. So I'm in my fourth year, and I was talking to Nancy LaSala, who is the president, and she really does just about everything in every capacity for the PDJF. It would not exist without Nancy. But we were talking about the fact that, and especially, you know, contrasting with what's going on in racing in California and what we're facing and the loss of so many horses, you know, we're dealing with riders who have given everything short of their life to the game. We've got 60 recipients who receive a stipend that's nowhere near enough, and we've never been able to increase in the last 10 years. But it does provide some relief for them. And we have 60 riders who are incapacitated in various ways, whether they're paralyzed, whether they suffer traumatic brain injuries, whether it's full paralysis, quadriplegic, you name it. We really run the gamut of disabilities. And in my 4 years and in Nancy's 10 years, we were talking about this just this morning. Of all these people that have suffered so much that depend on us, I have never met one, not a single one, that would A, change the choices they made in their life and pursue a different career path or try to do something else, even knowing that they were going to suffer such catastrophic injuries, and B, would not, if they could walk again, get back on a horse. And I think that speaks more to, I think that's the connection of man and animal that gets lost in all of this. To echo what was just being said, like the horsemen really take offense to being categorized as people who take for granted these magnificent animals they dedicate their lives to, and they commoditize them too much and whatnot. But for jockeys, horsemen, trainers, these are people who, I always thought it was the funniest thing is these are people that wake up at 3:30 in the morning, 365 days a year, with a job that never ends, just to avoid having a 9-to-5. Right? They dedicate their lives to this animal, not because they want to do evil on them, because they really do love it. And I think nothing speaks more to that than, our disabled riders who are recipients who've really, had their lives ruined by the sport, by the animal, who would never give up, even the short amount of time they had being on the back of an animal and being able to compete. And, it's that rapport between, man and woman and horse that I really think is kind of jumping out when you talk to these recipients. When you get to really put a face to it, what a perfect example, and she'll be in studio, Stacey Burton, who suffered one of the most horrible injuries I've ever seen. And the video of it, you almost can't watch it. There was a loose horse that was going the wrong way around the racetrack, and she went head on. This was in Arizona. And it's a miracle that she's even alive. And she has probably the most traumatic brain injury of any of our recipients. And her day is a constant struggle. And her days are made up of constant rehab, and speaking is very difficult for her. Everyday things that you and I take for granted are very difficult for her. And I interviewed her at the Jockeys Convention in Las Vegas. She was part of a panel of four recipients from the PDGF. And despite this, she said, "I would never change it. I wouldn't change it for anything in the world. Even knowing what I know now and what happened to me, I would still do it."
Now, the courage involved in the face of potential catastrophe. It's remarkable. Mike, it starts at noon on Sunday till 7 o'clock, and I know it'll be even under some of those kinds of backdrops, it'll be entertaining, and it'll be encouraging, and I want to make sure that everybody's aware that if you've never given, Sunday's the opportunity.
What about a quick website where somebody else could donate if they missed the telethon?
I got the link.
It's pdjf.org, and there's a bunch of different ways you can contribute. You can contribute immediately online. You can request an envelope. But that's the website, pdjf.org. Check it out. And we are, like I said, we exist on bake sales. We exist on these events. We exist on fundraisers. Ultimately, our end game for the PDJF is to get permanent funding. We've never had permanent funding. And the jockeys are the only ones that don't have a safety net. In this day and age, that, they essentially go out there and risk their lives. And there's nothing other than the PDJF and then what, modicum of relief they get from various insurance companies and the racetracks, but there's nothing permanently in place. And so, the PDGF, we're always needing to infuse capital, and we would love a permanent mechanism. So that's part of the messaging as well.
TVG, PDJF, 1-844-TVG-PDJF on Sunday, noon to 7. TVG Mike on Twitter to follow Mike Joyce. And pdjf.org/donate to give. Mike, a wonderful job by the network and you. And look forward to seeing you soon, talking soon.
All right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate the time, guys.
Not at all. Mike Joyce, everybody. And Sunday for it. I want to thank Eric Hamelbeck as well. And, of course, Hammer again today. And Tony Black, Steve Askin, and Dan Ward with a really terrific visit, half hour with Dan. And back tomorrow for weekend preview, full handicapping assault. And, of course, today, Keeneland. Enjoy it, and we'll talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda. The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary. Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hyas, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hyas.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com performance plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.